Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 2000 with a release date of Friday, February 26th, 2016 to follow in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. The following is a QST. The FCC seeks input on possible license and band changes. Texas hams go fox hunting. A historic transmitter gets a new home. And in a special extended Newsline segment, we go back to our radio roots with Robert Sudock, WB6FDF, who was there at the beginning. All this and more in Amateur Radio Newsline's Milestone Report, number 2000, coming your way right now.
From around the world, this is Newsline, Amateur Radio's only independent weekly amateur radio news and bulletin service. Now reporting from Picayune, Mississippi, here is Don Wilbanks, AE5DW.
If you have thoughts on the ARRL's petition for the FCC to make changes to 80 and 75 meters, now is the time to share them. Or if you want to weigh in on a proposal that the FCC issue lifetime amateur radio licenses, take care of that now too. On the bands, the ARRL has asked the commission to fix what it calls a shortfall in available spectrum for RTTY and data, following the band's reapportionment by the FCC a decade ago. The ARRL would like to see the boundary shifted between the 75-meter phone and image subband and the 80-meter RTTY data subband, a proposal that the league's board of directors adopted as policy in July of last year. The ARRL would like the phone image subband to extend from 3650 kHz to 4000 kHz and the RTTY data subband to extend from 3500 kHz to 3650 kHz. The ARRL would also like 3600 to 3650 kHz made available for general and advanced class licensees as it had been before 2006. The FCC is also considering a request made last year for lifetime licenses to replace the 10-year term. In his petition, Mark F. Krotz, N7MK of Mesa, Arizona, pointed out that the general radio telephone operator license sets a precedent because it is already valid for a lifetime. Using the FCC's electronic comment filing system, select RM11759 for the 80 and 75 meter issue and RM11760 for the lifetime license issue. Let your voice be heard. At one ranch in Texas, the hunt is on, and it's begun a little earlier than usual this year. Amateur Radio Newsline's Mike Askins, KE5CXP, rounds up the details for us.
The scene will be the Pari Hain C5 Youth Ranch and Equestrian Center, just outside Killeen, Texas. And the competition will be nothing short of intense. This is, after all, a national championship. But if you're thinking Texas rodeo, guess again. Radio amateurs will be trying to lasso something a little smaller and more elusive than a calf or bull during the 4 days of contesting in April. The Amateur Radio Direction Finding Championships will be getting underway, taking on-foot fox hunting to a new level. This year's schedule is different. Customarily, competitors face off in late summer or early fall, but the shift to a spring event became necessary so that the best of the best could be selected for Team USA members to compete in the World Championships in Bulgaria in September. The competition will not only accommodate all skill levels, but offer an optional training day on Wednesday, April 6th, on an 80-meter short course before the event kicks off. The championships will then get underway on Thursday, April 7, and conclude Sunday, April 10. Opening day will also have hams facing off on a combination of radio direction finding on 80 meters and classic orienteering, an activity known as foxering. Yes, there'll be food, too. An awards banquet will be held on Saturday night. Lead organizers are Jennifer Harker, W5JEN, and Kenneth Harker, WM5R, medal winners who represented the U.S. at the World Championships previously. The competition is being sponsored by the Austin Orienteering Club and Texas ARDF. For more details, visit the Texas ARDF site, www.texasardf.org. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Mike Askins, KE5CXP in Shawnee, Oklahoma.
ARES emergency coordinators, district emergency coordinators, and section emergency coordinators are being encouraged by the ARRL to participate in a free webinar on March 1st, offering instruction on how ARES report forms are filled out, submitted, and how the information is used. The training webinar begins at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, but will also be recorded and made available online. Section, district, and local emergency coordinators are all advised to take advantage of the opportunity. According to Mike Corey, KI1U, the ARRL's emergency preparedness manager, this is the first time this webinar is being offered. As many as 500 participants can take the online instruction. You'll find a live link to the GoToWebinar registration form by visiting the ARRL website or contact Mike Corey for more details at ki1u@arrl.org. A recently announced discovery that illuminates Einstein's theory of relativity turned out to be relative as well to the work of one radio amateur in the 1970s. Here's Amateur Radio Newsline's Paul Brown, WD9GCO.
A worldwide team of physicists could not have been happier earlier this month when their discovery made global news. They had captured the sound of the collision of two black holes a billion light years away in space. The finding of the LIGO project, reported in the New York Times and other media, fulfilled Albert Einstein's prediction a century earlier that gravitational waves do indeed exist. Einstein would not be surprised, of course, and neither would other scientists who had long pursued this theory of his with their own imaginations and antennas. One of those scientists from years ago turns out to be a radio astronomer and a radio amateur, Joseph H. Taylor Jr., K1JT. Taylor was awarded the 1993 Nobel Prize in Physics with colleague Russell Hulse for discovering and interpreting the electromagnetic radiation emissions from a pulsar, giving new insights into gravitational waves. Their discovery, made at the University of Massachusetts Amherst in 1978, was one of many leading to this most recent revelation. The executive director of the LIGO project, Professor David Reitze, told the media this month, quote, "It's the first time the universe has spoken to us through gravitational waves. Up until now, we've been deaf." As any ham would add, "Good copy is everything, even with a black hole. It's all about the power of antennas and reception, after all." For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Paul Brown, WD9GCO in Valparaiso, Indiana.
In New York, it's time to warm up for the Palmanic Pursuit, a 70K trail run and relay on Long Island, New York, that navigates from Rocky Point east to Hampton Bays. Since the relay teams aren't setting off for their destination until April 3rd, the real pursuit right now is for amateur radio support. The event, which follows the Palmanic Path through five towns, is a benefit for the Greenbelt Trail Conference and its work to keep Long Island trails, such as this one, safe and well-maintained. It typically draws individual runners as well as relay teams of 2 to 5 covering 5 legs of the race in varying distances. Long Island hams or GMRS operators are needed to help keep things safe throughout the courses. The race starts at 7 a.m. and concludes around 3 p.m. with a party to celebrate a job well done. In a recent email to Long Island hams, Matthew Berman, KC2YDT, advised amateur radio volunteers, quote, "This is a great opportunity to exercise our verbal skills, new technologies, and cross-communication interoperability of various radio spectrums." The event will be managed using the ICS Special Event Management Model, he said, but this is not an ARES event. Interested? Please write him for more details or to put your name on the list. His email address is kc2ydt@arrl.net. It's time for you to identify your station. We are the Amateur Radio Newsline, heard on bulletin stations around the world, including the Ohio, Kentucky, Indiana Amateur Radio Society repeater, 14667 megahertz in Cincinnati, Ohio. A low-power transmitter donated from a Silent Keys estate is adding some high-power interest to the ARRL's historical collection. Let's hear more from Amateur Radio Newsline's Skeeter Nash and 5ASH.
It's not just a collector's item, it's a piece of radio history. It's a flea-powered transistorized transmitter that was used in one radio amateur's transatlantic contact in 1956. And now, it's set to be displayed in the ARRL's historical collection in Connecticut, a donation from the estate of Silent Key Gus Falgren, who was licensed as W1OGU when he built the transmitter with two fellow Raytheon engineers that same year. On September 18, 1956, the 78-milliwatt transmitter showed off some low-power, battery-powered prowess, achieving a 3,800-mile contact on 20 meters. Falgren himself was at the key, transmitting into a three-element, wide-spaced Yagi. His signal report of 339 signal came all the way from OZ7BO in Copenhagen, Denmark. As built by Falgren and his colleagues, Al Hank Hankinson, W1OSF, and Dick Wright, W1UBC, the transmitter was designed to run two Raytheon 2N113 transistors, and it was the first to run such transistors on 20 meters. The trio had built it to take up the challenge of trying to achieve worked all-continent status with it. The donation made from his estate by Andy Stewart, KB1OIQ, includes the original transmitter with a 7.013.4 kilocycles crystal, as well as the Vibroplex bug used for the contact, among other things. The ARRL will display it along with the bug, station log, and the issue of radio and television news that featured a story about the transmitter, and put the proud ham, Gus Fahlgren, on its cover. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Skeeter Nash, N5ASH, in Topeka, Kansas.
What's up next for a small group of 5 megahertz beacons in the UK? The Radio Society of Great Britain wants hams to tell them what they think. Amateur Radio Newsline's Jeremy Boot, G4NJH, has the details.
The Radio Society of Great Britain is looking for input on the future of its 5 megahertz beacons, which began operating in mid-2003 as part of a propagation experiment on the bands. Data has been recorded from the beacon's reception reports and will be used to help determine the next stage of their use. The Radio Society has now opened up a consultation on the beacons, particularly in light of technical difficulties and site challenges the beacons have faced. The trio began operations with the call signs GB3RAL, GB3WES and GB3ORK. More than 1.5 million propagation records are now stored in a database collected over the course of the experiment. The data is being analysed by Marcus, G0IJZ, and findings have been published in Radcom magazine as well as presented at conferences. The beacon's licences are up for renewal in 2017. For comments, visit the Radio Society of Great Britain website, www.rsgb.org, and navigate to the 5 MHz beacon forum. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Jeremy Boot, G4NJH, in Nottingham, in the UK.
Another kind of meaningful radio contact in the UK has been reported. In fact, the two hams, Chris, G0FDZ-P, and Roger, G8CUB-P, likely won't forget Friday, February 19th for a long time to come. They've reported on the UK Microwave Yahoo group that they completed the first UK amateur radio contact on the 241 GHz band that day at 1500 UTC. The microwave contact was made in locator square J001EP. The distance was 30 meters and the CW signals were 559 and 589. The next issue of the UK Microwave Group's newsletter, Scatterpoint, is expected to carry more details. In South Africa, it's going to cost more to get on the air. Starting April 1st, the annual amateur license fee will rise to 126 rand. The Independent Communications Authority of South Africa, ICASA, is giving hams the option of renewing for a 5-year license which costs 525 rand as a way to guard against additional increases later on. Hams wishing to renew for the 5-year period are being advised to send an email along with payment details and request to convert to a 5-year license. Those emails should be sent to dkurau@icasa.org.za. Let me spell that for you. dkurau@icasa.org.za. ICASA told the South African Radio League that the billing process is getting underway and license holders can expect their invoices in the next few weeks. For more details, visit www.sarl.org.za. Looking even further south, ham activity is alive and well in Antarctica. And if conditions permit, the 13th Antarctic Activity Week could shape up to be a big one. The Worldwide Antarctic Program reports that as many as 37 stations could be on the air through Sunday, February 28th, when the event winds down. But because conditions in the Antarctic are known to be changeable, if not challenging, check the website for an updated list of call signs and QSL managers. Visit www.waponline.it. If you can't chase penguins, you can at least chase some good DX. Speaking of DX, the Expeditioner and low-power contester Olivier, ON4EI, will operate EI8GQB in Ireland from February 27th through March 30th, taking on the call sign EI1A during the ARRL International DX SSB, Russian DX, and CQ Worldwide WPX contests. Send QSLs only via Logbook of the World or via QSL Manager, PA3249, Director via the Bureau. ISMO, OH2IS, is operating from Antigua through March 4th, mainly on CW with a call sign V26IS, QSL via his home call or club log OQRS. Terry, W2APF is active as V47JR from Nevis Island in the Caribbean through March 1st. Find him operating CW or SSB. And be listening for special event station ZV451RIO through March 6th. The station is marking the 41st anniversary of the foundation of Rio de Janeiro. QSLs go via PY1AA. Time for you to identify your station. We are the Amateur Radio Newsline, heard on bulletin stations around the world, including the KB9 WSL repeater in Rochester, Indiana. As we wrap up Newsline Report number 2000, let's go back to the earliest recording I could find of Newsline, Report number 1162, from November of 1999.
The following is a QSD. Hands respond to the wrath of Mother Nature, and the ARRL says the announcement of restructuring the amateur radio service is imminent. These stories and more on Newsline Report number 1162, coming your way right now. From around the world, this is Newsline, amateur radio's independent, on-the-air news and bulletin service. Now, reporting from High Point, North Carolina, here is Roy Neal, K6DUE. For the second time this year, ham radio operators in Turkey have been called into action after a strong earthquake rocked the western portion of that nation on Friday, November the 12th. The 7.2 magnitude quake was centered near the town of Gutsi, in an isolated area some 115 miles east of Istanbul.
That's the late Roy Neal, K6DUE. Roy wasn't just involved with amateur radio news. Roy was NBC's national space correspondent covering the landing of Apollo 11 on the moon, the Apollo 13 crisis, and many other aerospace stories. Roy was instrumental in getting amateur radio into space, but I'm getting ahead of myself. Let's start where all good stories start, at the beginning. I had the privilege of speaking with Robert Sudock, WB6FDF, about the beginnings of Newsline. Hello, Bob.
Hello there, and hello all you Newsline listeners.
A little background about Robert. Robert is one of Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF's oldest friends. You met Bill in when? I know it was the early 70s. When was it?
Even my memory at 69 is starting to fail me. Bill was one of my first contacts, I'm going to say 1973, when he was still WA2HBK.
And Newsline got its start, well, the Westlink report got its start a few years after that. So you have known Bill Pasternak and been around amateur radio Newsline from literally day zero.
Day zero.
Before day one. Before day one. It started off as the Westlink report, which, again, predates me, but as I recall, the Westlink report was a way to get information about Westlink, which was, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, a series of 220 repeaters in Southern California, and it was a bulletin service that basically they recorded, Bill, and I thought, wasn't it Jim Hendershot, I believe, was...
It was Jim Hendershot and Bill Orenstein.
Right.
I know. I've forgotten his call.
A lot of years have passed, Bob.
That's true. Bill has left us, unfortunately. Yeah. From Hawaii, he was an audio mixer at NBC in beautiful downtown Burbank and was one of the three people who helped create the production and in the early days presented to the amateur community out here in Southern California.
They would drive up to the top of a mountain. They would do this report. And a lot of times it had been recorded on a cassette machine, a standard mid-70s portable little cassette player like everyone had. You would buy at Radio Shack or wherever. Mm-hmm. And they would hold the microphone to the speaker, and they would do this bulletin once a week. And that became wildly popular, and in a few years, it morphed into what became Amateur Radio Newsline. So we go back to the beginning, to 1976, and they're sitting up on this mountaintop playing this report, which is a very local report, just about local repeaters, and then they start putting other information into it. By request, and other information by request, and it morphs into this thing that now has gone for almost 40 years.
That is true. some of the material was, a lot of the material was locally enterprised, but there was HR report and the ARRL letter, which Bill used to gather the information for the report. And we're very fortunate out here to have some mile-high mountains. So you could drive up and, you know, with 10 watts cover basically from the Mexican border up to Santa Barbara. That's about 200 miles. And what a glorious ending to it.
So that's how it all began. Westlink morphed into Amateur Radio Newsline, and it was Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, who took the concept from just a way to get the word out about the 220 linked repeaters and made it into a truly professional newscast about amateur radio that today is heard around the globe. One more pause for station identification. Next up, we'll take you inside KTTV Television in Los Angeles. Time for you to identify your station. We are the Amateur Radio Newsline, heard on bulletin stations around the world, including WC8VOA, the Westchester Amateur Radio Association's repeater in Westchester, Ohio. Now back to our chat with Bob Sudock. Bill Pasternak didn't create this thing called Newsline alone. Nobody could. It's truly one of those right place, right time stories where everything just kind of fell together. Bill was at the right place, with the right people, at just the right time, and he took full advantage of the situation.
He has taken the opportunity of anyone that had a broadcasting background, and obviously employees at the station. He had lassoed them into participating. And so many of the voices that you had heard post 1982 or 83 were mostly KTTV employees, professional broadcasters, and his mentor Roy Neal, K6DUE, Frosty Odin, his videotape editor at CBS Television City in Hollywood, was the one of the first editors of some of the video projects Bill had done for ARRL. As I say, Roy was one of his mentors, and just a number of professionals here in Hollywood that helped move all of his projects, including the Amateur Radio Newsline, forward. And, you know, we got a lot of wonderful support. The vice president of engineering at KTTV, and this was a combination of a production company and the station. So we had almost 200 engineers working at the studio. We had four production stages that were doing sitcoms. They were doing People's Court, doing Three's Company, doing All in the Family. It was just a very, very busy production lot. So many, many of the newscasts were recorded in post audio, in the announce booth or on one of the production stages. You know, we had 64 input Neve consoles for the production of the shows. Well, that's where we did Newsline. It was some place that was dark. That's where we'd go. You know, so we had, I don't know, a $20 million facility that...
To put that in perspective, that would be like you or me as little guitar players to go maybe record Happy Birthday on a cassette for our wives doing that at Abbey Road.
Absolutely. And Bill would buttonhole people during their lunch. Come on, we're doing this.
Yeah, because you couldn't tell him no.
You could not tell him no.
Amazing.
Beautiful guy.
That was probably Bill's greatest talent because he didn't have the best speaking voice. He had a certain accent, but his talent was pulling people together and putting them in the right place at the right time with the right group of people, and magic is what came out of that.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Indeed. And now you folks are carrying the torch.
Well, we're trying, and you know, like you, there's probably not a week or two goes by that I'm like, oh, I gotta ask Bill something, and you know, of course, it's just like, you know, my parents. There's a million things I still need to ask my parents, and they've been gone forever too. So, I miss that crazy Uncle Bill.
Indeed. Yeah. Indeed. Well, thank you for doing this. There's hundreds of thousands of people that are blessed for your output.
Well, we're trying to continue on. So big shoes to fill, and we know we can't fill them, but we can at least. And I've said this many times as well. We can't walk in his footsteps, but we can continue making footsteps. They'll be a little bit smaller than his, considerably, but we're marching on.
And I will put this forth. I don't think this could ever be recreated. I don't think there is anyone out there that could get this done today. People, they don't know the right people. They are not as committed. Who would do it for 37 years?
For no pay.
For no pay.
Yeah.
I don't think this could be done today. For anything, this is not just amateur radio. I don't think it would ever get done.
It's a pretty amazing thing.
It certainly is.
Well, that covers a lot, but there's still one more mystery to solve.
So the magic question is, why are there beeps during the local breaks?
Right. A question that's been asked many times.
And the answer is, the answering machines that Bill had selected had silent sense in them. And if he left a silent 5-second slug, the machines would hang up.
And we still do it.
And you still do it.
And we could probably not do it anymore, but you know what? We're going to still do it.
Because
we are.
But that's the heritage that comes with it.
And, of course, we've just scratched the surface. But if you'd like to hear more of Bob Sudock and me chatting, reminiscing, and telling some untold stories about Bill, you can hear more of our little trip down memory lane on the extra page at the Newsline website. It runs 32 minutes, and I promise you'll hear more things you never knew about Newsline and Bill Pasternak. Next week, report number 2001, The News Never Sleeps. With thanks to Allen Labs, the ARRL, Matthew Berman, KC2YDT, BBC.com, Mike Corey, KI1U, CQ Magazine, the FCC, Hap Holly and the Rain Report, the Irish Radio Transmitter Society, the New York Times, the Radio Society of Great Britain, Robert Sudock, WB6FDF, the South African Radio League, Southgate Amateur Radio News, Texas Amateur Radio Direction Finding, TWIT TV, Worldwide Antarctic Program, and you, our listeners. That's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline. Our email address is newsline@arnewsline.org, and more information is available at Amateur Radio Newsline's only official website at www.arnewsline.org. For now, with Karen Eve Murray, KD2GUT at the news desk in New York, and our news team worldwide, and for everyone who has ever worked on Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Don Wilbanks, AE5DW in Picayune, Mississippi.
And I think it's only fitting that Robert has the last word. Mr. Sudock, would you like to put the wraps on Newsline Report number 2000?
Well, it would be my pleasure to say 73, and thank you for listening. Amateur Radio Newsline is copyright 2016. All rights are reserved.